Recently, the Hogg Foundation launched its Strengthening Mental Health in Rural and Rural Border Texas Communities initiative, designed to strengthen access to care in rural Texas communities. But this effort didn't happen in isolation. Two of the grantee sites were co-funded in partnership with the Amarillo Area Foundation and the Bivens Foundation, organizations deeply rooted in the Texas Panhandle. Joining me today are Laura Escobar of the Amarillo Area Foundation, Catherine Wiegand of the Bivens Foundation, along with senior Hogg Foundation program officers Rick Ibarta and Tammy Hines. Welcome to all of you.
No,
Thanks for having
thank
us.
you. Thank you, Ike.
So I would like to begin with the landscape. When we talk about rural mental health in Texas, especially in the Panhandle region, what are some of the realities that communities are facing right now?
Ike, this is Catherine from the Bivens Foundation, and I'll kick off. I think
Hi,
it's
Catherine.
important to talk a little bit about the geographic area that we're talking about today. For those who may not be familiar with the Panhandle, we are essentially the square at the top of Texas. So it's 26 counties that makes up nearly 26,000 miles. So it's a very large, spread out area. There's a hub in the center, which is Amarillo, a little over 200,000 population. But except for the two counties that are involved with the Amarillo area, all the other 24 counties are rural. So it's a large area, spread out area, lots of drive time, lots of open space. And so, as we know, with medical care, that can be a challenge. And we have some data that was gathered in 2022 by the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute, our regional center here in the Panhandle. Told us that in this 26 county area, there are about 320,000 adults, and 23% of those have some kind of a mental health need. And of those adults, 22% do not have health insurance. So significant mental health needs, but also significant lack of funding to receive care. For children in this area, children and youth, it was estimated about 80,000 children and youth in the area. 38% of those had some kind of mental health need, and 11% had no health insurance to help cover those needs. So it's a large area, very spread out, and lots of mental health needs and challenges.
Yeah, and then you add on top of that, small communities and small populations that don't always have the resources to support a psychiatrist. And so those families are left with deciding, can we drive to Amarillo? Is that 60 miles or 150 miles? Does that mean I have to take off of work? Does my child have to leave school and miss a full day? And so, they have to face a lot of questions of what do I have to sacrifice to get this care? And so, rural mental health matters because, and I think Catherine and I have talked about this a lot, mental health is health. But unfortunately, our systems are not set up to address that in kind of a holistic approach. And so rural just faces very different challenges than your urban areas.
I agree completely. I think we're also seeing, compared to 20 years ago, the stigma around mental health is not as large as it used to be, but it's still there. And there was a recent campaign targeted toward farmers, lots of farming in the Panhandle area of Texas, and lots of pressure on them, to produce and avoid all the things that can wreck your crop. And so just the knowledge that so many of our farmers and the workers are struggling with mental health, but that's a segment of our community that is very hesitant to reach out for assistance, to even speak about mental health challenges. And so the stigma is there all over Texas, but in the Panhandle, some of our populations are even more hesitant to admit they have issues and seek help to address them.
Yeah, that's a great point, Catherine. And I think if you think about a small rural town where everybody knows everybody, you know what the buildings are, that can be very intimidating to drive up if it were a designated clinic, because everybody would know what that purpose was. And so we have really done some interesting things with collaborative care within primary care settings. For that reason, because also to reference that data that Catherine was talking about, what we know of the residents in the panhandle is 80% of them were mild to moderate symptoms, which really told us that we can address those in a primary care setting. We generally will have a primary care doc in a rural community, most of them. And honestly, if we can address those early in mild to moderate, hopefully we can intervene at a really critical stage where they're not having to wait 7 to 8 to 10 years to receive critical, serious care that they are going to have to come to Amarillo, and we may not have the beds. They may have to go to Lubbock or Wichita Falls or wherever that might be. And so it is important as a rural perspective to think about how do we right size the solution for the things that we do have in those communities. It's also just really hard to keep our talent here because they want to go where there is infrastructure to support their career. And so that's something that we're constantly talking about in the Panhandle, especially with the new state hospital coming. So lots of challenges within the rural space.
I think
Thank you.
the provider shortage is a really important thing to hone in on. And our 2022 data told us that two categories of providers, the first one, licensed behavioral health physicians, in the Panhandle, there are 31 of those individuals. And that means they each, if you allocate it out by the population, they each are responsible for serving 13,000 residents of the Texas Panhandle. And that compares statewide. The statewide number is more one to about 7,500. And then if you look at licensed psychologists, there are 20 in the Texas Panhandle, which means their caseload, if everyone was served, would be 20,000 residents. So I know statewide the challenge of having enough providers is crucial, but I think it's important to see what those numbers look like for us here in the Panhandle.
Yeah, and how they're distributed. I mean, my guess would be there's the bulk of them are in the Amarillo area. There's certainly not going to be one per county, so that people actually had immediate access to them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think we've made a lot of advances in telehealth, but telehealth is only as good as the broadband service you have in your region. And we
Right.
still have
Right.
regions in the Panhandle that don't have reliable, affordable broadband. And so this is where some of our focus areas start to overlap, where it's hard to talk about one without the other, because it's one thing to have that available, but if you don't have reliable broadband, you don't have a safe
Right.
space, confidentiality, that doesn't really do a whole lot for those communities. And so
Right.
when we talk about that, it's broadband's not just a luxury. It is a priority and a necessity for things like this. And that's something we're definitely dealing with in the Panhandle regions. It's very expensive to lay
To
fiber
get it
in the
there. Yeah.
Panhandle. So that's another just kind of intersection of why it matters to be talking about rural mental health.
I like when we talk about broadband as a utility because I do think it is in that framework. I mean, we're at a point where in order to get services to people, that is a key service that they actually need to have access to. And you're right, just getting it to the areas is so significantly expensive. Not to mention having the infrastructure to have a space where people can either come. Certainly, it would be ideal if they were getting it to their own home, but even that is a whole nother layer that we can't guarantee at this point. So
Yeah.
yeah, I just wanted to comment too, your comment about stigma. We've heard that. I think that's so interesting. the distinction, you know, something that you don't deal with quite as much in suburban and urban areas is, oh, everybody knows what that building is. You know, it so if something is labeled a certain way, there is a hesitation for people to want to seek that out. And I think one of the things that's been really useful, and it sounds like you all have certainly done this and worked with this kind of thinking, is to be as generic as possible so that everything is health related, because people are much more open to being responsive to that. But then also to have integrated care where people are getting services connected and they don't have to go to different places in order to receive those services.
Yeah. And it's also that warm handoff. So in our collaborative care model that we had done a 3-year grant with the Meadows Mental Health Policy Institute, one of those was in a rural area, so Moore County, integrating that into their primary care, and they are working to expand that. But it's about something Rick will talk about later, but that durability. And so like something that's not, you know, everyone's favorite part to talk about or is sexy, but, you know, you got to have strong workflows and billing and all of those things so that your office can continue to do that after our seed funding. But primary care is such a great way to target individuals because that's where they're going to go. And if you set them up and provide the doctors and the nurses and the everyone from the moment you walk in to the time you leave and have that community worker in there who's then connecting the dots, because it's real easy to get a piece of paper at the end that says, oh, it says I should do this. But somebody that's saying, oh, before you leave, we're going to connect this dot here and then we're following up. That is really life-changing in a rural community where they maybe we can't get a psychiatrist there, but we can connect them through primary care to the right resources. It's at least a step, and it's at least talking about it, which I think is really, really, really critical.
I think that follow-up is crucial as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, it's interesting because Tammy and I spent like an hour and a half today talking about workforce. It was for a different project, so but totally related. First off, we can't say express how excited we are to be partnering with the two of you. And I will tell you that we've been thinking about this for the last couple of years, ever since you hosted this funders meeting that we had with the Texas Rural Funders. Tammy and I were there and we immediately started seeing like opportunities. We're optimists. You know, I always look at the glass as half full. I acknowledge that it's half empty. Okay. So I'm not Pollyanna about it, but we walked away and we said for the next iteration of WRC, kind of what we call our Wellbeings of Rural Communities, our first cohort, that we wanted to have a geographic footprint in the panhandle, something that we didn't have. And now that we had some really strong relationships and partnerships through the Bivens and Amarillo Area Foundation, we thought, okay, when we, you know, develop this next project, you know, we want to talk to you guys about it. And so we were just so, you know, excited to hear the receptivity and the trust that you place in, you know, kind of the design work. And so, again, you know, I think it, you know, you've touched on a lot of the real kind of key challenges that rural communities face, you know, like when we zoom out and, you know, we're a statewide grant maker with smaller pockets. But, you know, we're talking about 254 counties and we're talking about 200 and I think it's 58,000 square miles just over that. So it does really, you know, kind of amplify the provider shortages, the issues of transportation. You know, it's like if many rural communities don't have public transportation. And, you know, if you have to drive, you know, an out, you know, 100 miles or so to get to a provider. And then, you know, you touched on this beautifully touched on the stigma issue. So I think, you know, that was one of the reasons several years back that we decided that we wanted to kind of make a real strong pivot to move our work and our grant making upstream. And because, you know, we funded all kinds of stuff, you know, recovery and peer support and integrated care for well over a decade. And we know that integrated care compared to treatment as usual, you compare both of them, far superior outcomes, patient satisfaction, patient outcomes, people get better, providers, you know, feel like they're really making a difference because they see that difference, and it's less costly because then you don't have the, you know, emergency room and the law enforcement, which are in many areas the de facto mental health provider. So, you know, I think there's, you know, the opportunities are there that we have a lot of funders, whether they're governmental funders, private funders who continue to fund, you know, innovations and workforce and, you know, innovations like integrated care. But thinking about how do we go upstream? Because I'm also a realist is that, you know, we've been talking for decades now that we need more doctors, more nurses, more psychologists, more psychiatrists, more social workers. And then you fast forward, and this is kind of decades. You can go back in the literature, you know, it's, you know, they've been writing about this for decades. So today we still have the same thing. So our thinking has really evolved around how do we go upstream and how do we support communities to come together and define what are those conditions in their communities that contribute to poor health, poor mental health, and what assets, relationships, resources, liabilities, all those things that they possess that they could, you know, perhaps, you know, come up with some ideas and solutions versus Rick and Tammy in our offices in Austin talking about what's best in Dalhart. We don't know what's best in Dalhart, but the people in Dalhart know what's best for them. And so, you know, we talk about this concept of trust-based philanthropy, but it's really, you know, that it's really shifted our thinking and in terms of how do we provide funding as a platform for communities to come together. And that's why we're just really excited to be in partnership with the both of you. So that way we can bring communities together and let them define what are those conditions, let them create the solutions and let them pilot test that. To really think about that, creating that culture of mental health and well-being, and not to get swept down the river to, you know, downstream where they will need, you know, kind of those crisis type, you know, immediate and more intensive level of care.
Okay, yeah. So thank you for all of those wonderful reflections, all of you. So for this episode, I thought we would take turns at posing the questions. And so I'm happy to hand this next one off to Laura and Catherine, asking about the power of co-funding. So why don't you two take it away?
I love what Rick said about the passion and the focus of the Hogg Foundation in Austin. And here, Laura and I are based in Amarillo, and we serve the Texas Panhandle. And I think sometimes the stars align because the Amarillo Area Foundation became involved with Texas Rural Funders, and we followed a year after they did. And that's really how I had never heard of the Hogg Foundation before joining that organization. And so, especially when Rick and Tammy, when Amarillo hosted a member meeting and Rick and Tammy came to Amarillo, we had a wonderful opportunity to get to know each other better, learn more about the respective foundations. And Rick and I even exchanged books because the Hogg Foundation and the Bivens Foundation were both started by women whose family wealth kind of came about in the same way. And it was fascinating to see how different parts of the state benefited from that philanthropy. So I love that because we were part of this statewide organization focused on rural issues. And when the Hogg Foundation put out this this invite to participate in this mental health focus in the two areas of Texas, Laura and I knew Rick and Tammy. We knew the foundation. And for the Bivens Foundation, when this opportunity came out and they indicated they were going to pick one site in the Panhandle to participate in the cohort, the Bivens Foundation was in the middle of a grant cycle at that point. And we knew that we had more funding available than we had asks that had come in by the deadline. And so we just decided, well, what if we use part of the funding we have to fund a second cohort? And then Area Foundation said, oh, my gosh, that's a great idea. We'll do a third cohort. And so I just love that by participating in a statewide organization and spending time outside of our office boxes, we were able to make this connection and then leverage the funds that we have here locally to do something even greater.
So I would ask Tammy and Rick, because you know Catherine and I have worked together on several projects, including our regional Meadows Institute Panhandle Center with other funders. So I think collaboration is really kind of our secret sauce in the Panhandle. And so we've done this before, but would love to know what excited you guys about getting to partner with somebody from the Panhandle, because you could have easily just selected somebody, a site here. But you really were proactive in saying, hey, we could do this on our own, but we could also do this with Bivens and with the Amarillo Area Foundation. What about that was exciting to you? And just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to start. Again, we have not had a strong presence at all in the Panhandle. We've been wanting to do something in the Panhandle. And then to Catherine's point, once, you know, we met with you, I mean, we've known Laura. Laura and I have known each other for a few years, but have never really, you know, collaborated, worked. I think just the relationship here, that the relationship we built over the course of time since y'all hosted that meeting and hosted us there, we've stayed in touch, we've talked and idea swapped and, you know, hey, what are you working on? And wow, okay, you know, this is what we're working on. And just, you know, and we've, you know, I think we just really developed this relationship based on mutual trust and respect. And it just seemed like it was a natural to reach out to you and say, hey, we've got this going on. We think this aligns with you, with your foundations. Have a look at it. Give us your thoughts. And if this is something that you'd like to work with us on, we'd love to talk more about it. And that's kind of how it all started.
I'd like to go back a little bit further. I think that one of the pieces of this that was really important to Rick and I both was related to when we started the Wellbeing in Rural Communities Initiative and realized as we got proposals, how few proposals we got from certain parts of the state.
Mm.
And, you know, we recognize that right away. We have a great coworker who likes to map things out for us. And so we can look at things graphically. And we were able to see where there were these huge holes in terms of the what I was thinking of as the reach that we would have in terms of who even knew that we had put this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we looked at that, Rick and I both thought, okay, this is an area where we've got some real opportunity for growth because, you know, the Hogg Foundation has been around 85 years now. We can look back at the history of the foundation and map out where we've had any kind of an impact, which is really neat to look at. But in all fairness, it's weighted very much in the urban areas because mm-hmm. that's who's applied for the opportunities over the years. Now, that's not 100%. You know, I don't know an actual percentage, but I would say it's fairly low in terms of the amount of focus in rural areas prior to this initiative. And so we felt like that was something that we needed to make a really intentional effort to figure out how to get into different areas where we didn't have that footprint. And so around the same time, the Texas Rural Funders was coming together, and we ended up becoming part of that, which I think, just to make sure that we give enough credit to that organization, I think we've not only broadened our relationships through being part of that organization, but we've certainly broadened our knowledge base in terms of what we've learned about rural communities. And there's multiple other ways that we've really intentionally done that too. But I think that was really a big first step for us, was just getting to a point where we were surrounding ourselves with funders who that's the work they do. So here we're thinking, yeah, we'd like to play in this game. We'd like to be part of this and support this from a statewide perspective. But we're not the go-to people. We need to figure out how do we get to those people, because the other piece of this that I want to mention is I think one of the key messages that we wanted to get to our colleague funders was, even if we aren't partnering, please get this out to your constituents because you have that reach where we don't. And so I think, you know, this was really kind of a twofold thought. Number one, from an ideal perspective, we started talking about it like, wouldn't it be great if we could partner with other funders to do this so that our money stretches further? And I think, you know, that was really kind of this pie in the sky thinking, because, you know, timing may not line up. Mission may not line up. I mean, there's so many other things that can come into play, even if people are supportive of the work that you're doing. So bare minimum, we were thinking, let's just encourage people to get this out so that people at least know it's happening. And so I just wanted to highlight that because I think that alone was one of the very first pieces that was really important to us. And then I would add, going back to what Rick was saying, then we got the opportunity to go to Amarillo, and actually, I think the program that you all put together so that we got to experience being out in the communities and also learning about different issues that were happening in your specific areas, that was all really significant for us. And it really helped Rick and I in particular identify, because, you know, there's certainly lots of different areas of Texas that have need, but I think really thinking about the panhandle and the border as our two real focus areas, and wanting to try to have as much of an impact as possible. So by getting to go up there and spend time with you all and learn about your communities, then it felt like, oh, this is a natural fit. This would be so great. And I think we've kind of gotten the best of this with all three of us working together, because now we have this cohort of three organizations that I think in general, it's going to be really neat for them to have not only the learning community with all of the sites, but they have kind of their own little micro community. So I think that's going to be a really interesting thing for the evaluators and the learning team to support them with.
It kind of makes me think of two things, and Catherine will relate to this. You know, we hear this pioneer spirit, right? The panhandle, where we're kind of just making things happen up here, and, you know, we're just, no one's coming to save us, so we're going to figure this out. And I think that's how the panhandle came to be. And so when you think about our rural communities, there is a lack of capacity. And that's what I love about this program, is because without thinking about their capacity and the community buy-in, you know, they may not be able, they may not have somebody who knows how to write a grant or has the time or the ability or to manage that, or to come up to the foundation and research in our foundation directory online to know, oh, who else funds this? And so I think that's what, you know, I know Catherine's team does this, my team does this, you know, when we know that there's opportunities for our partners in the community, we're sharing that because we know we also don't have the dollars to fund everything.
Right.
But that's why it's important to have all of us and to leverage statewide funders to come in and say, hey, we see you. We see you from Austin, and we know what you're doing up there, and we want to work with you, and we want to expand your capacity and your reach. And so that's really exciting to me. And so I hear this from statewide funders a lot, that, man, I never get any applicants from the panhandle. We're trying really, really hard to push those things out for them to know, no, you are eligible and worthy to apply for this. Let's figure out how to do this. But there's a lack of capacity when they are just trying to get through the day.
Right.
Sometimes hard to stop and think about the other stuff that's important.
Absolutely.
That is so true. And I think as we think about having these three cohorts, but also looking forward to how can we apply what they learn over the next 5 years in other areas of the panhandle, because our three cohorts, one's in the northwest corner of the panhandle, one is northeast, and one is central. And it's interesting how different the quadrants of the panhandle are, even just in that 20,000 square mile area. And so I love that we're going to hit different areas of the panhandle and I think come up with different solutions and different action plans that then we can share not only with all the hog cohorts, but our other residents throughout the Texas Panhandle.
And then they can become leaders for the other communities in your area, which is super exciting.
Yes.
We're seeing that with some of the initial round of well-being in rural communities. And actually, this month, one of our sites is going to be presenting to the new learning community. So it has this kind of pay it forward mentality behind it, and really allows each of these communities to be strong in their own leadership, but then learn how to share that as well, and hopefully share that with the other communities of the Panhandle. I just love that.
It's exciting.
Okay. So, Tammy.
Yes.
You are next up. So
I know
you've got some thoughts percolating. So if you don't mind just tossing it out into the conversation.
So I know we're recording, but I also know you can take this out. This is where we're going to talk about Rick's durability, right?
Okay, wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I think we can start with just like building the local capacity, you know, kind of some of the things that are kind of laid out in the themes. I mean, we all can say quite a bit about the importance of building capacity. And as a funder, you know, we could do it through, bringing nonprofits together and boosting them with some proposal development 101, proposal development 102, you know, just that to help them, you know, kind of really think about their messaging, how to put together a proposal, those kind of things. So I think we all can say things about that. And then maybe, you know, I can jump in about the whole thing around that sustainability versus durability.
Yeah, I was really, really focused on that. So I apologize for that.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Give me just a second to recollect my thoughts, because
sure.
I
sure, yeah.
So, one of the things that we've spent some time thinking about and really trying to learn from the communities that we've worked with is, what does sustainability or durability look like in communities? And the way I think about that now, I won't say that it started off this way, but the way I think about that now is partnerships that our communities are focusing on, and really trying to make relationships that allow them to continue the work that they've started. And kind of taking that backward, I think it's really interesting, because the establishment of partnerships is actually partially what brings different groups of people together, different sectors, and people that can often be focused on very different goals. And yet we say at the Hog Foundation, you know, mental health is at the core of everything. And so if you actually take that message and think about people's well-being, it's fairly easy to make an argument that it is a positive thing for many different sectors to be involved in. And so as communities like to come together and try to get more buy-in from different groups, these partnerships often will form. It can help establish stronger relationships. And over time, there can be this ability to, I'm trying to think of the right word to use, almost entrench this into the infrastructure of each community. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to be really intentional. So just to kind of think through, you know, as funders, obviously we are funding for a period of time. We, as we mentioned before, we have a limited amount of money. We're trying really hard, all of us, to make as much of an impact with the amount of funds that we have to spread in whatever the geographic area is that we're responsible for. And so we're always thinking about what happens after the grant, what happens when the money is no longer coming in. I think As much as we might love to be able to fund indefinitely, we all know that that's not a possibility. And a lot of times there's some real truth to there are certain things that really need to be built into the structure in order to stay available and present for the community. And so, you know, I guess in general, I'm curious how you all think about when you're thinking about the timing of a project and when you're thinking about our goals for the end of the project and, you know, what do we really want to see toward the end? How do you think about that in terms of sustainability for the people that you're going to be funding, the organizations that you're going to be funding?
Laura and I have talked about in the past, I think we've, over the years, we've both learned really important lessons about how crucial it is for, especially in rural communities, for things to happen in a grassroots mindset. That we, as we're the two big foundations, well, two of the three in the panhandle, and that we're not going in there and saying, this is what we think you need, this is what you think you should do. And so one thing that really appealed to me about your program and what these cohorts are going to experience is that they determine for their individual community, what are the crucial points? What are the needs? What are their local resources that they can utilize? And what does the plan look like for them? And because this is over a 5-year period, I don't think they're going to feel rushed or stressed about having to come up in a 1-year period, you know, let's figure it all out.
Right.
And so the beauty of this is that there is time, there are coaching resources to help guide them along, but it's their individual conversations. It's their community conversations and not dictated by us as the foundations.
Yeah. And I think it is important that, you know, we preach this. Most foundations are like, oh, collaboration, and who are you working with and what are you doing? Yeah. And so really right now, what we're doing with this collaboration is kind of putting our money where our mouth was, right? We are also collaborating. And that's important. It's at a different level. But, you know, you cannot work to address these big issues in silos,
right?
Because it creates duplication, it creates confusion, and there is a power in people coming together and just sitting in a room and learning what each other is doing. And even if that is the agenda for that meeting is like, hey, I didn't know you were doing this, or I didn't know you had a van, and I've been needing a van for the last 10 years. There is power in just having a community come together, cross sectors, to sit in a room and talk about an issue. But I also appreciate the time. You know, these problems did not develop overnight. And so sometimes we feel the sense of urgency to like, oh, we got to check off these things. And this takes time and it's going to evolve. And we're going to take 2 steps forward and 3 back. And then we're going to leap again. And that is okay. That's how these community collaborations work. And so I also appreciate that it is community driven. It is cross sector, and it is giving them the time to really do this, because we have some wonderful collaboratives in the Panhandle that have been working in kind of their frontier cities for years. And part of one of these was born from that. And so had we said after a year or 2 years, man, they're not doing anything, we would have missed out on a lot of opportunities. So I think from a funder's perspective too, is we have to right size for rural.
Yes.
We cannot expect that, you know, our rural communities are going to have the same things that we have, even in Amarillo and Canyon. You know, a really simple example is we had a grant, and their goal was to have an LPC that was going to be providing these services, and they can't get an LPC to come. And so they came back to us and said, well, here's our next option. And we said, great. The end result is that those students are getting that service. And so if we can't get the LPC, but you can get the licensed social worker, awesome. Let's go for it. And so as a funder, really being willing to say, okay, maybe we can't get somebody in that small town, but we can get this, and right size it for them, because the end goal is for people to have better access. and better care. And so,
to allow those plans to change, I think is so significant.
Yes.
And I don't know that people are used to that. So I absolutely commend you for recognizing that. And I think that goes back to this idea that funders in general were prescribing things that might not work. And I'm not saying that's what you did, but I just in general, I think there were things put out there that, you know, people thought they were going to work because they had worked somewhere else, but then they brought them into a certain community and that was not what was going to happen. And so I love that flexibility, really. And that really is that self-directed, self being the community, letting the community direct where things are going and what's going to work for us.
Building relationships, building partnerships and time, and kind of, it's been to me, I see like the three legs of the stool, as a visual, but, it's just, it takes time and, you know, to really, to afford communities the opportunity to really, institute some type of change. You don't do that with a 1-year grant, you know, you don't do it with a 2-year grant. You don't even do it with a 3-year grant. So I think, you know, what we learned from our first cohort is that thought, you know, 5 years is good. I mean, we think that's a real doable thing, and giving them time to really form their partnerships, bring people together and to kind of create a shared vision, because everybody's going to come with their own thinking, their own agenda, their own, you know, kind of relationships, networks, assets, what they have, what they possess, if they're an agency or they're an organization or they're a faith-based organization or a community member, but each person has all of this kind of stuff, right? And I think what's really exciting, what we've seen over the course of years funding this type of work, is seeing those relationships really kind of come to fruition and creating a shared vision of what can be, you know, community mental health. What does that look like for our community? And how do we get there? And people willing to make the kind of commitments and bring their assets and relationships and resources and networks and all of the things that they can bring to bear to be a part of something bigger than just themselves. And I kind of always go back in my kind of my thing that I say is that no one organization can do it by themselves. Whether you're a funder, whether you're a nonprofit, no one organization. So that's really speaks to the power of relationships and partnerships.
Yeah, I think a strong example, Catherine, you know, we started or funded a regional center, Meadows Institute Panhandle. And originally, you know, they came to the Amarillo Area Foundation with this proposal. And at that time, when Clay Stribling was our CEO, I said, you know, Clay, this is bigger than us, because mental health affects everybody. Even if it's a health foundation, mental health is a part of that. And so that's where we really felt it was important to have the big funders in our area come together, because mental health is kind of the cornerstone of all of that. And we knew it impacted the seniors that Catherine has a focus on, and community health, and so children, I mean, everybody. And so luckily, we do all play really nice in the sandbox together, and we have a really interesting, because of our geography, I think, can do some of those really collaborative things. And so there's power in that, and it does
Absolutely.
Send a message to the community that this is important enough that this group came together to help address this issue. And so that's I think that's what's really exciting about this, too, is that we can, again, keep furthering those collaborations.
You know, Laura, I just love that you said that. And you said something similar a minute ago about these partnerships. I hadn't put together, you know, we try really hard internally to live the way we are encouraging our communities to function. Which essentially is allowing the community to lead, right? And allowing the community to make those decisions and identify their own issues and all of that. And partnership has become such a key piece of that. I had not put it together that this was a really good way of modeling how important we think that is. And yet I completely agree with you. I think that's all of us kind of living or our truth and saying that we do believe this is really important and we do believe there's power in these partnerships. I might have to steal that. That's pretty fabulous. So
take it away.
Really great.
And I think it's helpful too that I think part of the reason that we collaborate successfully is that we communicate on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. There are about 8 to 10 foundation CEOs from the Panhandle, and we meet for lunch every other month. And oh, then a lot of our grant program officers are starting to meet together and have coffee mm-hmm. and talk about things. And so, number one, it helps keep the momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, not just the larger foundations, but the smaller ones, it allows input from foundations all over the Panhandle so that we have the variety of experience, and some run medical centers and others don't. So when I think about all the conversation we've had today and moving it forward and keeping it going, I think it's those interactions, but the communication, the continual mm-hmm. communication among our local foundations, between Hogg and Area and Bivens. And to me, that's what has allowed this to happen and is what will help make it successful.
Agreed, Catherine. Thank you.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that's a good takeaway lesson too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I really would like to, get y'all out of here. Because I know y'all are very, very busy. I just was thinking that, and maybe this question is more for Laura and Catherine, although Rick and Tammy, feel free to chime in as well. Just regarding anything that your organizations may have on the horizon just in the coming months that you would just like for anyone listening to be aware of, and where they can go to get more information about the different things that that you all are working on.
You want me to go first, Catherine?
You go right ahead.
So we have quite a few different granting opportunities. We have about 10 different cycles that run throughout the year. I will not try to recite all of those, mm-hmm. but if you go to the AmarilloAreaFoundation.org, and you can go to grant opportunities, we have a list of all of those grants, when they open, when they close. I think the biggest thing for the Amarillo Area Foundation that we try to express is please call us. So if you've got an idea or a proposal, we want you to reach out to our grant officers so that they can help guide you and make sure that we are a fit for your organization. We never want people to try to stretch their program to fit into us. No, we will help direct you. If it's not for us, if it's more of a Bivens type proposal, we're going to send you to Bivens or some of the other funders. And so the biggest takeaway for the foundation is we want to get to know you. We want to partner with you. So please call our officers. You can click the contact now and it'll send them an email and they'll set up a Zoom or a call. But we've got lots of opportunities. Our largest funding areas are in health, education, and economic opportunity. And within health, we have food insecurity and mental health. But we have lots of different grants that range from $2,500 all the way up to whatever your program might need. So website is a great resource, and reach out to our officers. They'd love to talk to you.
Laura said it so well, I could almost say ditto for Bivens. our focus is seniors, just enhancing quality of life for senior citizens. And so any project or grant request that involves seniors is always going to be high on our list. So I would encourage you to go to bivensfoundation.org. That's B-I-V-I-N-S Foundation. And just like for Area Foundation, you can see what our funding areas are, what we're focusing mm-hmm. on. But our big focus right now is on senior hunger. And all of the foundations are kind of working together mm-hmm. on hunger in general, but our focus is specifically seniors. And we've created a website. It's seniorhungersolutions.org. And if you go to that website, there's data about how many hungry seniors are in each county and what resources exist in each county. And so this is something we'll continue to develop. We'll work with the other foundations. But our big, hairy, audacious goal is to find solutions for availability, affordability of healthy food for seniors and everyone across the Texas Panhandle.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
You all are both so inspiring. And I walked away from Amarillo feeling so connected to your communities, but also just all that we learned from you all. And I walk away from this conversation feeling inspired also. So it's reminiscent.
Thank you, Tammy. Same here. We love when we get to collaborate with you guys, see you at meetings. Just saw Rick and South Padre a couple weeks ago and learned so much from that meeting. And I know Catherine and I will welcome you guys anytime to the Panhandle.
We definitely
love
want to come
have
back.
You back.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Laura, Catherine, Tammy, Rick, just thank you so much for taking the time, to have such a rich conversation. I know there's so many just different angles from which, anybody can come at this. In about 45 minutes, y'all did a wonderful job. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ike.
Thank you, Ike.
Thanks for hosting.
Yes.
You're welcome. Okay, all, we're out.
Thank
That's it.
Thank you, guys.
I think this will be terrific. And I'm hoping to get this out like maybe the Wednesday after this one. So, and I'll, yeah, you'll know as soon as the episode is all edited and has been posted.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Ike, again, thanks again for, kind of hosting this and putting this together. As you mentioned, we're all kind of busy, we got spinning plates and none of them can afford to drop and break.
Sure.
So it was just a really a real benefit for us for you to say, hey, it's like I got this idea. Like, I think this is going to be good for a podcast.
Yeah.
So thank you for putting that together for us.
Yeah. If y'all didn't know, we're actually doing an arc of episodes on the theme of partnership, and this episode will complete that arc. So,
super cool.
Yeah,
that is. I like
all right.
that.
All right. Well, bye everyone.
Thanks, guys. Right. Good to
all
see you.
Right. Thanks, Catherine.
See you soon.
You
bye.
Right.
Bye.
So long.